Chorus Call. Please hold for an operator. Welcome to Chorus Call. Please hold for an operator. Welcome to Chorus Call. Please hold for an operator. Welcome to Chorus Call.
Full name and company.
Pranadi Patil from Research Byte. Connect me to Credit Access. Credit Access.
Johnny.
The conference is now being recorded.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, you have been connected to the Credit Access Grameen Limited Q1 FY20 results conference call. Please stay connected. The call will begin shortly. Thank you. Good day and welcome to the Credit Access Grameen Limited Q1 FY20 earnings conference call. Please stay connected. The call will begin in the next few minutes. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the investor call of Credit Access Grameen Limited to discuss the Q1 FY20 results. Today, we have with us from the line of management, Mr. Udaya Kumar Hebbar, Managing Director and CEO, Mr. Divakar B.R., Director, Finance and CFO. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Udaya Kumar Hebbar. Thank you, and over to you, Mr. Hebbar.
Good evening to everyone. I thank you for taking your precious time and joining us today to discuss our Q1 FY20 performance. Before I provide a brief overview on quarterly financial performance, I would like to emphasize that we have been able to deliver strong growth despite challenging environment faced by NBFC industry. We have remained strong on both liabilities and assets front. We have comfortable liquidity position with an adequate cushion and over 2,800 crore funding in pipeline. Our prudent liability management is backed by well-diversified mix of domestic and foreign sources. Going forward, we target to meet 35-40% of our funding requirement through foreign sources by leveraging our strong parentage of Credit Access Asia to access global fundraising opportunities. Our long-term credit rating of A+ helps us to borrow at competitive rates. We hold more than 80% of our funding in the form of medium and long-term loans, which not only helps us to maintain positive ALM, but also enables us to focus on robust business growth. Although we are rated A1+ for short-term paper, we have not raised any amount through commercial paper. Our gross loan portfolio increased by 39.4% YOY to 7,619 crore, primarily driven by 32% YOY growth in our borrower base to 25 lakh borrowers. The average outstanding per borrower increased by 5.5% YOY to 28,800, which we feel a reasonable increase. We have achieved the growth with consistent investment in branch infrastructure and human capital. Our branch network increased by 31% YOY to reach 753, spread in 170 districts in 9 states and 1 union territory. We added 83 new branches in Q1 FY20. Our strong human capital grew by 32% YOY to 8,641 employees, including 6,165 loan officers. This will enable us robust growth in the coming months. While we continue to further deepen our presence across districts in non-urban markets, we also expanded in new geographies. We entered in Jharkhand state in Q1 FY20 and subsequently in July, we entered in Rajasthan and Gujarat. We are now present in 11 states and one union territory with a well-defined plan to grow district by district and gain market share both in existing and newer geographies. We believe there are significant growth opportunities available for microfinance players with strong balance sheet and a strong non-urban focused business model. The rural markets seem to be temporarily witnessing a subdued consumption demand and slower growth in asset-based investments like vehicle, tractor, two-wheeler, etc. compared to last 1 year. However, in such testing times, microfinance plays a very important role by providing timely support to sustain the income generation and livelihood activities for rural households. In any case, a large number of rural household families need to come out of informal borrowings to formal borrowing, and microfinance acts as the vehicle for such transition. As a validation to our deep penetration, more than 40% of our new customers are first-time borrowers to formal financial services as compared to 26% in the industry during FY18-19. This process of reaching the unbanked hinterland will continue in our business growth. In case of Credit Access Grameen, our unique customer-centric business model helps us to understand customers' specific needs and handhold them throughout their entire life cycle. We have designed our technology back-end systems and processes to provide customers flexibility and manage their diverse needs. Today, we have one of the lowest lending rates in the industry with 59% of our GLP at 18 and 19% lending rate. We maintain high customer engagement throughout weekly meetings. Our employees also have sound understanding of rural market as 90% are hired fresh from the rural communities. This helps us to maintain higher borrower retention and stable portfolio with lower loan rundown of the portfolio. We can generate healthy growth from existing customers along with lower customer acquisition costs. This helps us to maintain one of the best operating cost efficiency and uniquely positions us to capitalize on the highly underpenetrated credit in the non-urban areas. Coming to the financial performance during the quarter, interest income increased by 28.2% YOY to 364.2 crores and portfolio yield was 19.7% compared to 20.7% in Q1 FY19. Weighted average cost of borrowing was 10.2 compared to 10.5% in Q1 FY19, and the marginal cost of borrowing was 9.4 compared to 9.6 in Q1 FY19. We successfully raised 945 crores of fresh funds in this quarter at a weighted average cost of 9.33%. Net income increased by 32.4% to 246.9 crores. We maintained healthy cost efficiency and cost to income ratio of 30.4%. And OPEX GLP ratio at 4.8%. Pre-provision operating profit increased by 29.6% YOY to 163.6 crores. Profit after tax increased by 32.7% YOY to 95.83 crores. We continue to maintain strong asset quality with GNPA of 0.55%, backed by higher provisioning of 1.1% leading to 0% net NPA. Collection efficiency was 98.9%, ROA at 4.8%, ROE is at 15.9%, and debt equity at 2x. We continue to maintain robust capital adequacy of 34.6%, which provides us significant headroom for growth for coming quarters. With this brief overview, I would like to open the forum for Q&A session. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may please press star and 1 on the touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and 2. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Parag Jariwala from White Oak Capital. Please go ahead.
My question is, if you look at some of the players like, to particularly take the name of Bharat Financial, they have...
Can you be a little louder, Parag?
Sure, just 1 second.
Hello. Am I better?
Yeah, perfect.
Yeah. So I was saying that, you know, if you look at some of the players, like Bharat Financial have indicated that basically there is, you know, over leveraging or a very high competition in certain part of Odisha. Some of the other players have also come out and said the similar thing about West Bengal. I know that we are not present in these two states in a meaningful manner, but are we seeing, you know, some sign of over-leveraging or a very high competition in the states we operate in? That's my first question. And my second question is, you know, you have indicated in your opening remarks that basically there is some slowdown in the rural market. I agree that our segment, the customers' need, and the way in a business in which they are into, it's quite different from, let's say, auto market and et cetera. But overall, do you see at some point in time that kind of slowdown will also start hurting our customer base as well? And what is the preparedness for both these things? I mean, very high competition and likelihood of, you know, any slowdown in our organization.
Sure. As you anticipated, you know, West Bengal or Assam or Orissa, we are not there. Orissa, of course, we are there, but very small way we have started our business. But we are not seeing any over-leveraging or concerns in the areas where we operate. However, mm-hmm. we always remained out of the urban pockets in anticipation of some sort of overledge always happening there. So that is we continue to work in the non-urban market, which has been our strength. So therefore, we do not see over-leveraging issue in our operating model and our business operating area. In terms of slowdown, what I specifically said that there is a possible some sort of slowdown you witness, particularly investments by the customers in rural market, particularly in auto segment or tractors or two-wheeler, seen some. But this particular business is moving customer from informal to formal and creating income generation and livelihood activities, which will continue to be potential, and particularly in the rural market. I think that clearly shows us there is a huge potential still out there in the non-urban, particularly rural market. The testimony that was said that the new customer acquisition, more than 40% are the first-time borrower for microfinance in our segment, which compared to 26% in the industry at this point of time, which clearly shows that the deep in which we are going with the hinterland and the potential still out there. We do not see any such impact on us, at least in the near future. But the model in which we are working should not have such impact for us in the near future.
Sure. And just a very small bookkeeping question. If you look at our weighted average cost of funds have gone up slightly in the quarter, QOQ, but our marginal cost of borrowing has come off. So is it fair to assume that, you know, the some of the borrowing which were like low cost got repaid during the quarter?
No, Parag. This is more arithmetical. A lot of funds which we had drawn, for example, in the month of March had come in the last 3-4 days of the quarter. Thereby, the interest cost per se would have been very less, but it would have been when you calculate on a higher average denominator. And when you actually see the same thing happen for the June quarter, you will actually see the interest cost coming in. So there is no change at all. In fact, on an overall basis, we have reduced cost of funds. So this is more arithmetical, and there is absolutely no change in the way we have been borrowing funds.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Deepak Potdar from Sapphire Capital. Please go ahead.
Hello. Hello. Thank you very much, sir, for the opportunity. Sir, last 2-3 quarters, we have been seeing our NIMs going down. So what is the key reason for that? And given your marginal cost of borrowing is now coming down, so do we expect some pickup going forward?
See, you may see the NIMs actually, you know, they have got sort of normalized now. In the, if you look at the last year and now, this is the first one full year of Ind AS transition and completion. So what you can see actually is more of regrouping and plotting the numbers in the manner which is as per the requirements of Ind AS. But if you look at the, you know, Q4, NIM was around 12% and now it's 12.6. And for the entire FY19, the NIM was around 12.7. So this is more or less, you know, after one complete year of Ind AS transition, you are able to say that this is sort of, you know, a given in terms of the NIMs that we expect, given the rates and the yields that we have. So we believe that we have reached a level of stability in terms of some level of predictability in terms of our NIM.
Okay, so this is the range that we might be looking at in terms of stable.
Yes.
And in terms of cost to income ratio, also there was some increase this quarter, right?
I think it is very small. I mean, 35.2%, 30.4%. I think normally first quarter will have a difference. I think we have to see the entire year, which will make the real understanding of it. But we don't see it going up. It will remain around 34-35%. That is what our estimate has been.
Okay, understood. And my final query is related to your AUM. Now we have been growing quite strongly. So over the next 3 to 4 years, is this the rate that you would be comfortable with, on a sustainable basis in terms of a growth?
You know, from a CAGR point of view, if you ask me for the next 5 years, probably it will be about 30% CAGR. It will definitely come down from this level based on the book base size actually. So it will slowly come down. So average would still remain at about 30%.
Okay, understood. Sure. Thank you very much. That's it from my side. All the very best.
Thank you.
Thank you. A reminder to all the participants, anyone who wishes to ask a question may please press star and 1 on the touchtone telephone. The next question is from the line of Renish Bua from ICICI Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Congrats on a great set of numbers. Sir, a couple of questions. One is on the penetration side. So, you know, so we have been hearing a lot about, over-penetration and so on. So what is your reading, from the access to data which you have from the credit bureaus? I mean, would you like to give any color qualitative comment on the penetration at the India level?
Okay. So the data what is available to you or me, I think very that thing, which shows some penetration higher in terms of the portfolio per customer is slightly high in the E. But when you look at the population versus the penetration, it's still low, actually. It shows that still there's a lot of opportunities are there. But as usual, I my comment is between urban and non-urban. So I think we need to, we personally, we actually at GreatX Grameen, we want to keep these two different set of business opportunities. So in non-urban and rural, we have not in any parts of the country the over-penetration or anything. So we don't see any challenge in terms of the growth or any risk in this business. Urban, of course, we have been following the model that will not go to urban. We continuously keeping out of the urban because there is a possible over-penetration, not because of microfinance only, because of the supply side is quite high. So that is why we always kept this basket away from our business.
Right. So, I mean, just, you know, a follow-up on that. So when you enter a new geography on the rural side, so you are basically a first lender to that district or center, or you find a already player there and you are competing with that? I mean, how is the proposition when you enter a new geography or a new district?
Yeah, it's a very interesting question, Rinesh. Close to 50% of the customer, we are going to be the first lender in the rural. Other 50%, you will see, there would be already maybe one MFI or a bank or somebody will be there. So we still compete there 50% cases.
Okay.
So, but still, we ensure that when you are in rural, when a new customer, we keep a low value for them and keep tracking them over a period of time. So, and provide all the services to them. So, but 40 to 50% it's a new customer for any form of borrower, any form of borrowing.
And sir, what's the average ticket size we offer to the, let's say, a new to formal, you know, platform kind of a customer? I mean, let's say if cycle one, cycle two, if you have any breakup on that.
We provide a credit line of 35,000 to the new customer. However, if I give a breakup of my portfolio, 58% of my portfolio is less than 30,000 average at this point of time, less than 30,000 rupees. And only 22% is more than 50,000 portfolio, against 33% of my customer are more than, borrowers are more than 3 years with us.
Okay.
So average in a group, it's 28,000 per customer. It's the total of outstanding. So we are I think it is increased by just 5% over last 1 year.
Got it. And so just last question from my side. We have hired a couple of gentlemen on the technology side and new business development. So would you like to comment on that front? I mean, where we have reached in terms of the technology upgradation as well as the new business development?
See, from a technology point of view, we have been technologically advanced since last 3-4 years. That's one of the components we are able to build the right kind of processors, multi-product processors, multi-type of requirement processes, all driven by technology. Also, efficiency is driven by technology, which is already there. What we hired recently is particularly more on an innovation front, which is an ongoing process. For example, recently we have done complete end-to-end online audit and risk controls and monitoring system developed for that. Every data, every information is online for even a branch manager when he visits the center, or a area manager when he visits the branch or center. All data are online and analytically driven and supported to them, which we already done. And already the branches are operating on a tab. The online information available and the instant credit check is under testing right now. Pilot is going on. So many things are happening in the field. And even the cashless disbursement, which used to be about 20-30%, now we are all currently at 52%. So that also gone up. Retail financing, 100% cashless mode, even collection and disbursement all. So it's an ongoing process, and we are continuously building on that.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks a lot, sir. My country.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Rajiv Pathak from GC Investments. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hello, sir, and congratulations to the team for a very good set of performance during
Thank
this
you.
Time. Sir, just think, this time around the credit cost has come down to less than 1%. So how are we seeing this credit cost panning out over the year, and how are we seeing the movement in the 0 DPD, the 30 DPD buckets, if you can just share that?
So, Rajiv, we have all along saying that our business is one where once we have the right systems and processes and control, our gross NPA will be less than 1%. We had been maintaining this. So what we now see, especially in the last 3-4 quarters, is that we have come to that stage of, you know, the gross NPA, at least the way we operate in this business, is in that same range. So last quarter it was 0.67, this is 0.55. So we expect to be in this same range, and we will continue to be having a very high portfolio quality.
Okay. And
just to add, Rajiv, when I say 0.55, this is the 60-day CPD, not even 90-day CPD. So we have changed our LGD model to depict the 60-day CPD as the part. That is why it is 0.55% is against that.
Okay. Got it, sir. And on the cost to income, so we have been, growing our infrastructure by 30-31% kind of a run rate, and going on to 35% cost to income ratio. So how are we seeing this trajectory now?
So as mentioned the last couple of quarters also, we have a strategy wherein we actually go ahead with our expansion plan in the first 2 quarters of the financial year. And ours is an asset-light model where we don't really invest much of, amounts in setting up a branch and the infra per se. So what you see is a normative, comparative increase in the cost-to-income ratio compared to the fourth quarter, where you actually have seen the peak of complete investments completed. But this is not something that will impact your C2I much. We will continue to be in this range of, you know, 30 to 35% depending on the quarter we are, and that's where we will be most of the time.
Okay. And just last question, I missed the part on the expanding geographies. I heard Jharkhand as one of the states. Which are the other states where we are expanding?
I said in July already we have expanded to Rajasthan and Gujarat, which are all against the border in district of Madhya Pradesh. As always, we grow district by district, basically contiguous district penetration basis. So bordering Madhya Pradesh, we actually crossed over Rajasthan, Gujarat and Jharkhand at this point of time.
Okay, sir. And thanks a lot. And all the best for your future.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Karthik Chilappa from Buena Vista Fund. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you very much for the opportunity, sir, and congrats on a good quarter. My first question is, you are, in your opening remarks, you had indicated that 40% of your customers now are sole borrowers from Credit Access Grameen. What will this ratio be for Karnataka and Maharashtra alone?
Okay, when I said the 40% is the new customer what we acquired during FY 18-19 are new to any kind of borrower. So it's close to 44% actually. So our single, what do you call, unique customer who only work with us is about 39% at this point of time. I don't have data in right now for Karnataka, Maharashtra specific, but it's still around the same, between 30 to 39%.
The reason I ask this question is because of your relatively deeper penetration in Karnataka and Maharashtra. I would think that for a new entrant or for a marginal player, their first port of call would ideally be a customer who has already done 3 or 4 cycles with you to establish the repayment track record. So I would think in your main markets of Karnataka and Maharashtra, the ratio of borrowers who borrow only from you would have come down over a period of time.
No, it's not come down. It's not come down because Karnataka and Maharashtra together, we form almost 70% of the 80% of our business. So within that, 39% is the unique customer, which means there is a loss from these two states, else it cannot be. Correct? But still, I don't have right now number at this point of time. Maybe we can share offline. But it cannot be too different than this. And 80% business in this state.
Got it, sir. Okay, I'll follow it up offline. My second
sure.
question is your observation on over-leveraging in your states. I'm just curious to understand, how typically do you measure over-leveraging? I know that regulation-wise, there are some soft limits of about, let's say, 80,000 or maximum 3 MFIs or so. Apart from that, what other additional metrics do you track to measure over or under-leveraging among your borrower base?
Maybe it would be good how we enter when we start a branch or when we enter a district, how we measure the district before even entering, because basically this has a relation to that. What we look at, the apart from demographical data like population, the rural, the poverty, the economy there, we track the number of players there in urban and rural, number of portfolio already created by there, number of borrowers already there, number of MFIs there, number of defaulters there in the same geography, which gives us the hint in the based on PIN code, where this is over-penetrated or where it is risk with the higher default or where there's a risk with the higher competition. So we get such data and we keep on tracking over a period of time in every place.
Got it. And so my last question is, if you were to look at your loan officers today, let's say in a very seasoned market like even Karnataka or so, what is the limit up to which, with respect to the number of cases they can actually handle per month?
So we kept very less to manage because for us, the overloading of the employee is not a good sign. So our employees will, on average, handle between 400 to 500 customers, 500 borrowers, that's all. We don't want them to handle too many because this is a relationship-based business. The trust we have to create with the customers is a good relationship. So that is why we have a high concentration of customer centric business and a high customer retention ratio also.
Sorry, when you said 4 to 5, is it 4 to 5 groups or 4 to 5 customers?
4 to 500, 400 to 500 total borrowers. Okay. They handle actually five groups per day, actually.
5 groups per day. Okay, perfect. Thank you, sir. Thank you very much, and wish you all the best for the remaining.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Agastya Dave from CAO Capital. Please go ahead.
Thank you for the opportunity, sir. Sir, most of my questions have been addressed. Sir, the only thing that I wanted to understand was on the credit cost. You just mentioned that how it will be less than 100 basis points. So in terms of qualitative processes in place, what would you attribute is the biggest reason for such nice numbers? And do you expect this 1% number to be there through the cycle? I mean, if I take a 5 to 7 year long cycle, in that period, do you think the credit cost will still average below 1%? Because India has shown this tendency where something or the other will happen after like every 3 to 5 years, which would throw even good business models out of the window. So in terms of those contingencies, what do you have in place? And again, as I said, the main question is that what is it in your process which ensures that the credit cost remains so low?
So microfinance is a business which is actually it's not lending model, it's a collection model. The ensuring that every process, every time, and monitoring each of the process by the auditor risk is very important. And alerting the entire employees to link to this process is actually following the process is very important. We don't incentivize our employees on disbursement on collection. We incentivize them on following the process, right kind of training to customer, right kind of servicing to the customer. That is what our process. We don't follow the incentive model to disburse. Because following the right process is the key in this business to have a right kind of collections, right kind of attitude toward customer, right kind of relationship with customer. That is what we build in terms of the entire training model, acquiring only the fresh employees and train them completely on this, acquire a rural employees and train on this model. So those are the strengths. And implementing the strong quality system all the time is very, very important. This is what we always implemented. That is why this should work all the time. Why when you said one or two incidents, black swan events which have impacted, but even such time it will impact less to us because this is a really resilient model what we built. Even the history have shown you when there is a large scale impact, Grameen has actually escaped with very small delinquency of 3.9%, I believe. I think the resilient model of delivery is very, very important, which has a fundamental process control as a model. And a multiple level of defenses what we build in our business, which protects and ensures the quality is followed all the time. Starting from forming the group, training the group, nurturing the group centers through a multiple communication to customers. So these are all many fundamental pillars are there around that, which is the model, which is a resilient model. So I think that model, so long we are able to build, that is what exactly we do when we grow. It is not the capital constraint or a borrowing constraint. We need to grow very responsibly, very carefully with how much you can employ, how much you can train, how much you can control, how much you can control the cost. So this is the fundamental philosophy in our growth. That is why our model has a very sustainability capability.
Great. Sir, in that case, do you have a rejection rate number? I mean, do you outrightly reject a group's application? Do you control this quality before lending itself happens? Or do you restrict this with the collection, on the collection side? Where do you place more emphasis?
I think very, very important question here. In fact, even we are recruiting as a customer or a borrower, I think about 10 to 12% potential customer get rejected. based on, not based on credit bureau, not based on something else, based on whether they know each other well or not, whether they're living in the same economy or not, whether they understood the process, whether they got to know that how the co-borrowing will work. Based on that, we reject about 10 to 12%. If they are not fit, we are not taking them. Then the question of credit bureau, question of cash flow, all will come. So afterward, even the lend, even when we relent or after the renewal, I think we have about 30% rejection. Look like we don't lend based on experience, based on the behavior at the center, based on the over borrowing tendency, based on not participating in the center meeting, based on not utilizing the money for the proper way, because we check every loan whether it's utilized for the purpose or not. A lot of risk control mechanism there when you renew the customer.
Right. And so this, when you said that you rule or you throw out or you reject 10 to 11%, so this would ensure that the entire group gets rejected, or just few individuals in the group?
Few individuals in that group.
Okay. Fine. Thank you very much, sir. Good luck. Good luck with the business, sir, for the next quarter. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Pranav Tendulkar from Rare Enterprises. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for the opportunity and congratulations on a great set of numbers.
Thank you.
Could you? Hello. Can you hear me?
Hello. I can hear you.
Sir, can you please let us know what is the rate of growth in your core states like the Karnataka, Maharashtra, Madhya Pradesh, and the new states that you are entering into? So what is the sustainable growth rate in your core states and others?
As the base increases, the rate of growth will come down. For example, in Karnataka, our growth rate is far lower compared to other states where we started operating. The AUM growth in Karnataka was just around 20-25%, whereas when you take to MP, Chhattisgarh, it is about 60-90%. So that type of growth we have. So let's say, quarter on quarter or year on year, Karnataka is coming down, but it's not that in terms of portfolio. In terms of percentage, it comes down. But with the deep market still available in Karnataka, it's still growing at a very small pace. Even Maharashtra also same, about 25% we grew. But other states, MP also still grew more than 50%, because that still have a large potential, huge market there. Tamil Nadu, MP, Chhattisgarh are growing fast states. So those are the outside Karnataka market geography grows between 50-90%.
Correct. So, sir, in large states like Karnataka, which are well penetrated with microfinance institutions, what is the sustainable growth rate for, say, next 10 years?
10 years is too long, but I can tell you one thing. When you have a large number of retained customers, even if I stop growing the customers, still I will grow with the portfolio.
Right.
It will start at least 10-15% growth will happen there. So that is with the new customer coming, it's some part of the existing customer growing next level. So 10-15 or 15-20% growth will continue to happen.
Correct. Sir, also, you have started the retail finance, and that is a very, very intelligent thing to do, because as users translate into next needs and next users of the fund, they will be catered through this channel. So,
correct.
Are there any regulatory limits, etc., where a microfinance borrower, if he translates into a, say, vehicle finance or etc., if he borrows from you, he will still be, you know, classified as a micro borrower and not will be subject to the micro borrowing limits that are set by RBI, or you can translate these people into a unlimited other borrowing needs?
Actually, they can do. It is not microfinance. It's a microfinance company can do up to 15% of balance sheet assets as a non-microfinance business. So there is no limit in terms of the pricing or in terms of the tenure or in terms of size or security. It's as equal to an NBFC lending. So you can do that. There is no limit. However, the limit as a total portfolio cap, it is not more than 15% of the balance sheet assets.
Correct.
And then we are at about close to 5% at this point of time.
Yes,
we still have a very good cushion there.
Yeah. Sir, what are the avenues of fee income from this customer? See, only worry we have is that as these customers will grow, they might probably think that banking channel is the channel with less cost of borrowing for them. And that situation will be worsened if we don't have many hooks in the customers. So if we have many hooks, like, say, some products which we are selling or some payment facility, etc., that we are providing. So what are the avenues that you have considered in terms of having more hooks into existing customers so that good customers stay with us and, you know, right to weed out bad customers stays with us?
So one is actually the only good customer, retained customer, captive customer will move to this business who has a sustainable business and sustainable cash flow available. There are lots of checks and balances to move to this. Now the question is that how long we can hook them with us. So our view is to continue to follow our customer needs. So even tomorrow they want 10 lakh, probably we should be able to give 10 lakh if they have a right kind of business and right kind of cash flow. But it will take longer time. Right now they are transiting from micro to a probably MSME. If you see our average outstanding there is just 73,000 at this point of time. But yes, this customer will grow to next level and we continue to support them. Our view is over a period of time, we will be able to give them many more financial services, be it investment, be it savings, be it fund transfers. We will be able to get those facilities available to them through different partnerships. But that is after some time when we create a fundamental proper business model in this. So we are in that process right now to create a fundamental model. Maybe 1 to 2 years, we will have this business, steady business. Then our view is to get these other facilities to them, which will make them more, supply all the possible products to them. That is what our view.
Right, sir. Thanks a lot. If I have more questions, I will come back into the queue.
Sure, thanks very much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Renish Pua from ICICI Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi sir. Just couple of data points. So sir, what's the borrowing outstanding as on June? Last quarter it was 5,300 crore and 92.
Borrowing
outstanding.
You are talking about liabilities, right?
Yeah. Borrowing part, I think.
Just a second.
Yeah, I'll give you. So the borrowing outstanding range is around 49, close to between 49 to 5,000 crores. 5,000 crores, you can take it, yeah.
Okay. So last quarter, so this is including securitization or ex-securitization?
No. Borrowings. We are talking about borrowings. Borrowings do not include securitization. So it is debt securities 562 plus 4387 plus 24. It's around 5,100. Including securitization, it is 5,100. Excluding securitization, it will come to around 4,900.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Yeah, that's it.
Sure.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Manan Shah from Moneybee Group. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. I just wanted to know if you can provide some background of our workforce, like what are their qualifications, etc., etc.
Workforce?
Yeah.
I think, as I said earlier, we recruit the majority of our employees only from rural because we are working in the rural or non-urban area, so that they will be able to see our clients and actually think about the clients well. And in terms of attrition also it's lower in such case because they're from rural and they're operating in rural, so that helps. So majority are from rural and majority are a first time employee of Grameen because we provide them to grow into loan officer, then branch manager and area manager like that. Now, over a period of time, our entire operating organogram, you can see the structure is the people who were joined as a loan officer first, which are either 12th pass in the states like Karnataka, Maharashtra, but other states, more or less, we have a graduates there. And, and only in head office, particularly, we take professional from outside in terms of audit and then IT or finance. We will take professionals which are from other laterals. Otherwise, normally we don't take lateral employees in our operation. We groom, we train, and we grow them internally in the system.
Okay. Thank you. That helps.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Shritam Daga from Synergy Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. I just wanted to understand if you're seeing any impact of the rural consumption slowdown that is being talked about by other companies?
No, I think I said first only that rural consumption is not negative or anything. I think the what we observe is the investments in asset class, particularly assets in terms of tractor or two-wheeler or vehicle, we have seen a bit down when I saw the data point. Whereas microfinance is continue to be the requirement of this kind of low-income household for income generation and livelihood activities. And the majority of customers are moving out from informal borrowing to formal borrowing. So that is why we don't see any problem in terms of growth or in terms of quality in this business.
Understood. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Saptarishi Chatterjee from Centrum Wealth Management. Please go ahead.
Yes, sir. Thank you for the opportunity. My question is on the sales force. How is the attrition there? And when the attrition happens and the new employee comes on board, then the old groups that he or she was maintaining, what happens to that? And if the sales force can be movable, if one person of any rural region can be moved to any other region, so how that momentum works?
One is attrition. Our employee attrition is quite low compared to industry. We are at about 20-22% attrition, which is quite positive in this business. As a process, we have a transition. No employee works in any branch more than 2 years. There's already a hand-holding, hand-owing process. And no loan officer handles the same customers for more than 1 year. There's additional process we have. It's more of a risk mitigation. And we have a process of pre-hire training and keep the employees, potential employees ready for taking over the positions. Always we have 500-600 employees. Such employees are well trained, pre-hire. Any day we will be hire, and actually they come into a situation. They will be able to do the exact transaction within 1 month of their joining in the system. So we always have a high number of pipeline customer employees. And at a branch, if somebody attrition, there is always a notice period. In case they are not able to give notice period, it's always a backup of 10% employees in every branch, so that if event of the holidays or a leave or somebody is not coming, somebody absconding, there's a backup available all the time. So we don't have any handholding or such incidents where we don't have people to handle when there's attrition. It's a quite well-knit process, and well backup is maintained at all the branches.
Yeah, and also I wanted to understand that, as you said, the relationship of with the client and the sales guy that matters. So, when attrition happens, or maybe if someone is moved to other location, does it have an impact over that collection process or sales?
No, not really, because always the previous employee will introduce the new employee before moving to next branch, next location, and always introduce properly. And we have not seen any such incident because of the handholding issue, because it's a process following. As I said earlier, following the entire process all the time is important. The handing over also is a process. The branch manager will go, the new officer will go, and old officer will go. So they will actually hand over with a very, very transition model, actually. So we have not seen any issues in such transfer.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Agastya Dave from CAO Capital. Please go ahead.
Thank you for the... Historically, for the sector, outright droughts have not been such a bad situation. I mean, we have not seen a real blowout happening on the asset side, and the two parts of the rural economy, the agri and non-agri part, have been fairly like well-behaved, independent of each other. So this time around, if the monsoon currently is negative 16%, and there are vast portions of the country where it is much worse than negative 16. So in that case, do you think that the old, the difference between the agri and non-agri stress that we have seen over a period of time, that will maintain, that these two will behave independently? Or do you think the agri economy will somehow spill on the microfinance side? The problems in the agri economy, sorry.
Yeah, you are right. Actually, normally the agri impact normally is not spilled out to microfinance. We believe that that will continue to happen because microfinance as a lender, we are not lending to the agri economy actually. It's more of a non-agri or a agri allied, like, you know, buying a cow or a goat or a sheep. So that is an additional income generation activity for the farmers or a partly farmer. So they do that. So in this process, you know, this particular activity, it's a basic livelihood requirement. Even if it's a drought, even if it's a difficult situation, this becomes the key driver for them to have the livelihood. I think even with such situation, we do not see an impact spilling over to this non-agri economy.
So let me give a particular example that I have in mind. So one of the activities which have been historically shown to be extremely profitable as an income generating resource for rural people who are taking microfinance loan is animal husbandry and milk. So in case you see a real problem on the agri side and you have a lack of water supply and lack of quality fodder, or the prices going up, right? In such a scenario, logic dictates that there will be a hit on the economics of animal husbandry. So it's okay till, let's say, I guess 10% deficit, but if the monsoon is, let's say, 20% deficit, do you think at some level of agrarian distress, things will spill into the microfinance, or you think they will continue to be completely independent? And if they do spill in such a scenario, if they do spill onto the microfinance front, what is the hit that you are likely to take? I mean, how much do you think is vulnerable?
I'll give an example of historical issue. Actually, probably it's equal to drought, right?
Yes.
Say Karnataka and Maharashtra faced drought continuously for 2 years and 3 years in the last decade. So we did not find any such spilling of these two issues interchange. We're not seeing that actually. And what happens in microfinance for the customer or for this low-income household, this becomes a captive minimum, what you call, supply or a last resort of borrowing and maintaining the history clean for that access to such finance is always available. I think that is basically the philosophy what we always saw. Whenever there is a difficult situation, the customers tend to keep this option open by having a free and a quality repayment history so that they can access to this finance all the time. This is what we observed in all the incidences of droughts or multiple droughts in the interior Karnataka and interior Maharashtra all the time. I think probably I can only give the historical evidence to you.
Right. Even in let's say, Vidarbha and Marathwada, where we have had probably a decade of continuity.
Yeah, exactly. I'm talking the same places, actually.
Okay. Perfect, sir. Thank you very much, sir. Thank you. And good luck,
thank
sir.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that was the last question for today. I would like to hand the conference over to Mr. Udaya Kumar Hebbar for closing comments.
Thank you, guys. It was quite a good conversation. Thank you for spending time in this evening. It was a bit late for all of you probably today. Thank you. We look forward for the next quarter in maybe October. Thank you very much.
Thank you. On behalf
Thank you.
On behalf of Credit Access Grameen Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.
Thank you.